Good stuff.
Folks, as you're filing out, I'd ask you to please be kind, because we have a very packed agenda. Carla, could you please read time certain items 875, please?
Yes. Item 875, to the 2019 Portland Insights Survey final report.
Colleagues, I'm excited to share with you the results of the 2019 Portland Insights Survey. This new 56-question comprehensive survey was administered by the City Budget Office and opened for all Portlanders to take in May of 2019. Notably, there were 8,814 total complete responses, enough to draw statistically significant conclusions in order to compare responses across geographies and across several racial and ethnic categories. Using a new online opt-in and a community-based canvassing approach, the survey resulted in comprehensive data on community perceptions as well as budget and service priorities. The final survey reports represents the culmination of many months of collaborative work between the City Budget Office, the City Bureau staff, community leaders, and the people who live, work, and play in the City of Portland. I look forward to continuing the conversations with my colleagues in the community about how these findings can help the City focus our collective efforts and improve our operations to better serve Portlanders. And I will also just say, since this was the first year that we did this, it's certainly not perfect, and this is also a good opportunity for us to share our thoughts, our insights in terms of how we can make this even better the next time we do this. So I'll now turn it over to Jessica Kennard, the director of the City Budget Office, and her team to walk us through some of the high-level results of the survey. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you, Mayor. Good morning, Mayor and Council. Jessica Kennard, City Budget Director. I'm joined today by two members of my team who worked on the Portland Insights Survey, Shannon Carney, our Principal Performance Analyst, and Michelle Rubin, our Financial and Policy Analyst. We have 30 minutes together today for our presentation and discussion. The presentation we prepared will provide a brief overview of the project origin and goals, the survey process and design. Then we will move to highlight select findings from the survey results, and we'll close by presenting potential opportunities and next steps to maximize the value of this project and this information. Our goal today is for you to find this information interesting, useful, and engaging. Please stop us with any questions at any point in the presentation. We've just handed out copies of the updated presentation. You should also have a copy of the report as well. For folks following along in the audience or at home, the report as well as additional survey resources are featured on the City Budget Office's website at www.portlandoregon.gov/CBO. So we can get started. So with this survey, Portland joins the rank of other cities such as Kansas City, San Jose, Seattle, and Tacoma that are actively using citywide perception data to better inform organizational priorities and operational decision-making. Citywide surveys provide an opportunity to gauge feedback on big-picture priorities, community satisfaction with various services, and community insights on potential service improvements. As it says in the slide, this data can help shape organizational priorities, create feedback loops for program improvement, identify emerging trends and track improvement over time, and bring more objective information and more voices into conversations that may otherwise be subjective. These results have the power to tell cities what community members
Commissioner
think.
Commissioner Hardesty had a question.
Yes.
I just realized that the buzzing, is that just in my head or are
you
all hearing it as well?
Oh, it was just the wheelchair.
Oh, it was the wheelchair.
I had the same thought, Commissioner. I was looking around to see if any lights were flashing.
What if we had said, yes, it's just the buzzing
just
in your head?
That would have been fine.
More buzzing.
Sure. Thank you.
So last year, CBO received $60,000 in one-time resources to pilot a new citywide satisfaction survey. Our primary project goals were to build upon the value of the former longstanding auditor's community survey, to address various methodological concerns, and to ensure that the data was useful to council, to bureaus, and to the Portland community. We built this survey with the goal of providing useful information, and we're excited about the potential that this data affords us. However, no single data set can tell us everything. It's important to recognize what this data can and cannot tell us. This information does offer a powerful new data set that highlights perceptions of over 8,000 Portlanders on city services, satisfaction, and budget priorities. This data allows us to see citywide patterns and trends, which can provide even greater value over time if the survey is continued in the future. And since responses are available by community identifiers such as race, geography, age, gender identity, disability status, and residency, the data provides nuance into who our city is perceived to be serving well and who we may not be serving as well. This high-level overview of how different groups perceive and prioritize city services is critical to decision makers and bureau staff in empowering us to serve all Portlanders and to achieve our strategic goals. There are a few things I want to note that the survey cannot tell us. The survey methodology was opt-in, not a randomized sample of Portland residents, and even though we employed several new efforts to ensure representation from historically underrepresented populations, respondents still skewed white, older, female, higher income, and more educated. Steps were taken to address this overrepresentation in the report, which Shannon will elaborate upon later in the presentation. It's also important to note that in many cases, responses do not provide the why behind the results, which is obviously important to informing the right course of action. We can attempt to glean the why by cross-referencing this data with other available data or through follow-up engagement. So I'll now turn it over to Michelle Rubin, who will briefly provide an overview of the survey process and design.
So the 2019 Portland Insight Survey employed an online opt-in approach, as the mayor mentioned. It was available to the whole Portland community to take in the month of May. The online survey was supplemented by a community-based canvassing approach. In this, 37 multilingual community data fellows were hired to bring the survey into the field with a focus on surveying historically underrepresented populations. This group included students from Portland State University, Portland Community College, and also local community leaders. In developing the survey, CBO met with all bureaus and council offices to solicit survey question input. We convened a multi-bureau evaluation committee and provided an opportunity for final review to citywide stakeholders. CBO also worked with the Office of Equity and Human Rights to ensure the demographic questions on the survey aligned with proposed citywide expanded demographic standardization categories. CBO also worked with representatives from Smart City PDX and the Attorney's Office to conduct a comprehensive privacy review. And lastly, CBO worked with the Office of Community and Civic Life to test the survey instrument prior to going into the field and solicit feedback from selected advisory bodies. CBO deployed the survey via three main outreach strategies. We conducted digital outreach through city and community networks, and we also had the community data fellows in the field collecting survey responses. They canvassed at various events, including the Rainbow Night Market, Filipino Night at Portland State University, and Black Community of Portland meetings, amongst others. And we also handed out physical flyers at libraries and community meetings. Notably, with the survey's online approach, our team was able to analyze responses midstream during the survey and redirect our canvassing approach as necessary. Now, Shannon Carney and I will walk through a high-level overview of the survey results.
Great, thanks, Michelle. So before we do get to the results, I know that's what we're all waiting for. First, we want to say just a few words about the people that took the time, about 10 or 15 minutes of their time, to fill out this survey and give us their perspectives. So thanks in no small part to your work in supporting and distributing this to your constituents. We far surpassed our goal of 6,000 total responses. At the close of the survey, we actually had over 10,000 responses. But after data cleaning, things like removing incomplete surveys and duplicates, our final number was 8,814. It's worth noting that that a significant number of the surveys were conducted by our community data fellows, and those were actually the most common way to meet non and limited English speakers, as well as communities of color. And due to the strong response, we were able to draw conclusions, as Jessica mentioned, for several different race categories, but also for those living with disabilities. Residents over 16, over 1,000 respondents actually identified as living with a disability. The report itself includes specific sections with statistically significant findings for both non-residents, since it was open to those that live outside of the city as well, if they work or belong to a community group in Portland, as well as respondents living with a disability. Those start on page 61 at the end of the report. I also want to note that we'll be including an addendum with results specific to the Native American, Alaska Native, and Native Hawaiian Pacific Islander populations over the next few weeks. And then the other piece to note is, because we did not achieve a representative sample despite our efforts with canvassing, we corrected for that by weighting the results with data from the American Community Survey. Okay, finally on to the findings. So the report and presentation are actually organized into six broad themes. The first is community sentiment, where we ask these big picture questions. Civic participation is second. We ask about housing and economic development. We asked a few questions on safety and perceptions of safety. And we had a category on infrastructure, which includes transportation. And last, we asked questions about parks and nature. So today, I want to note that we're highlighting just a few of the findings. There's a lot more information in the full report, especially if you want to dive into one or more of the sections. So we'll start with the community sentiment section, which provides overarching trends of life in Portland. A key thing to note here in this section is that some perceptions are broadly consistent across across race and ethnic groups, and age, and things like how long you've lived in Portland, while other areas show pretty significant differences in of opinion and perspective. And the first finding we wanted to note here is that a majority of respondents are satisfied with Portland as a place to live, raise children, work or go to school, or be part of a community. That said, longer tenured residents and Black respondents were more likely to be dissatisfied. Next up, we asked, we asked questions about Portlanders' budget priorities directly. And in this category, we saw respondents showing both significant similarities and some real differences as well. So as you can see from the chart, respondents, regardless of race and age, chose increasing housing affordability and addressing homelessness, that was one response, as their top budget priority. So that's the dark orange bar that you see across each category up at the top.
Excuse me a second. I'm going to hold my questions to the end because I want to see the whole, I want to get the whole thing, and I have some questions. But I'm going to just... I know I'm a broken record on this, but I can't read the PowerPoint. It's too small, and I think there's too much information on this slide. The font is too small, and ironically, you said this skewed older female, blah blah blah. Older folks can't read this font. So I just have a standing request that when you hand out a PowerPoint, that it be large enough so that we can read it. Minimum of font 14, maybe 16, because I need a microscope to read the handout, and I appreciate the effort you went to do this, but please consider the failing eyesight of certain commissioners when you give it to us.
Thank you for the feedback. That's helpful. So I will continue. I will do my best to describe the graphs too, for those that can't see it quite as well. Thank you. So just talking about the budget priorities, right? So we did note that increasing housing affordability and addressing homelessness was the top budget priority. The second most cited budget priority was investments in city streets, sidewalk, and transportation. That's the yellow bar that you see across the different categories. The third is where things differed. So the third most cited budget priority varied actually according to race. White respondents chose police services, represented by the green bar. However, Asian, Black, and Hispanic respondents selected economic development above police services, and those who identified as multiracial selected parks programs as their third highest priority. So talk a little bit about how our respondents felt about the future of Portland. Here we found that optimism about the future of Portland to be mixed. Approximately 45% of citywide respondents felt positively about, reported feeling positively about Portland's future, while another 45% did not. Respondents with disabilities and those that have lived in the city longer are less optimistic about Portland's future compared to others, and that's represented by the blue graph on the right. You can see how pronounced that trend is as the respondents' length of tenure in the city increases.
That's interesting.
So we wanted to ask a question about advancing how we're doing around advancing racial equity, since that is such a big priority of the city. And to this end, we asked respondents to rate the degree to which they agreed with the statement, and I'll read it. In Portland, we are making progress on becoming a city where a person's outcomes are not based on their race. And here we found that responses were evenly split on whether we're making progress. Approximately 40% of respondents citywide agreed, and 40% disagreed. And here we saw some differences in race groups as well, and that's what you see on the chart. So here we see that Black respondents and those identifying as a gender other than male or female were most likely to strongly disagree. This is apparent. You can see about 30% of Black respondents strongly disagreeing with the statement. That's the dark green on the chart. So another new category question we're again, sticking with these big picture questions, we asked this entirely new question that asked respondents to identify the city's greatest challenges. And here we heard loud and clear, homelessness is perceived to be the top challenge facing Portland, according to our respondents. This perspective was shared across every race and age group. You can see that by the tall blue bars in each category. Homelessness was also cited in multiple sections of the survey, including as a reason why people moved and why they did not participate in parks programs. Also, from this question, it's interesting. We found that the high cost of living was the second most cited challenge, and that's shown by the orange bar. Concerns about affordability also reflected in other sections of the survey. So, reasons why people moved, the value of their utility bills, and as a way to improve parks programs. The third biggest challenge varied by race. So, Black residents scored the lack of racial equity as the third biggest challenge, citing this issue more than any other racial group, and that's in the dark blue bar. On the other hand, challenges with population growth were the third most cited challenge amongst most other racial groups, and that's the gray bar. I also want to note here, this isn't something that you see in the graph, but it's worth noting that we had a significant number of open-ended field responses here. Nearly 1,500 people wrote in responses in the other category, citing the biggest challenge. And there we noted that homelessness and drugs were the most commonly mentioned topics in that category, in that field. All right, I'm going to turn it over to Michelle for a few of the findings on civic participation.
Great. So hopefully the maps are a little easier to look at. They're similar color patterns. So on the topic of civic participation, the survey asked if respondents felt they had power to influence city decisions and felt they could easily access information from the city. The red map on the left shows the percentage of respondents per zip group who strongly disagree with the statement, I have the power to influence city decisions about issues important to me, with the darker red geographies being those who more strongly disagree with that statement.
Mayor.
In total,
Commissioner Hardesty.
So if I understand this map correctly, there is no segment of the city of Portland that feels that they have the ability to influence their government?
So, yes, this map is a little confusing. Basically, the average response in every geography was strongly disagree. And so the variation in color is the variance.
How strongly they disagree.
Right. So, so that's the average response. Not saying that folks don't all, some people might agree with that statement. Right.
Okay. That helps.
Great. Yep. So in total, 61% of respondents did disagree with the statement, though. And so the map on the right is showing us responses to the statement, I can easily get the information I need from the city. Here, the lighter green is being somewhat agree, the yellow is neither agree nor disagree, and the orange is somewhat disagree. So those geographies who most feel they do not have the power to influence city decisions also tended to find it difficult to get the information they needed from the city. Responses for both of these questions, as you can see on the maps, were especially negative in North and East Portland. So then we'll be moving into the housing and economic development section of the report. The survey asked about respondents' experiences with jobs and self-sufficiency. The pie chart here in the center shows responses to the question, I can find a job in Portland that pays enough to support myself and my family. Responses are relatively split here, with more folks agreeing. So 47% agreed with that statement, and 39% disagreed with that statement. In conjunction with that, more than 40% of respondents in every race and residency length group identified the high cost of living as a top challenge. Great, so this one, I apologize, is cut off a little bit at the bottom, but this is showing the reasons for moving. So the survey asked if respondents had moved within the past 2 years, and if they had, asked why. So this is that question showing why. Citywide, 1 in 5 respondents had moved within the last 2 years. And we see the responses here disaggregated by race. So for white respondents, and that is the group all the way to the right-hand side, the top reason for move was wanting a different type of home, followed by wanting a more affordable home as the second most cited reason. However, affordability was the most cited reason for moving among Asian and Black respondents, and that is the left, the farthest left group is Asian respondents, and the second to the left is Black respondents. And for Hispanic and the Latinx community, respondents said being close to work, school, family, and friends was the most cited motivation for moving. So you start to see some variation there. And the next slide will look a little deeper at moving and affordability concerns. The map on the left, similar type of map as before. So it shows the percent of respondents who moved within the last 2 years who identified affordability as the reason behind the move. So the darker red are the geographies that had a higher percentage of folks identifying affordability as a reason for the move. The map on the right shows responses to the question, I feel worried about losing my home due to cost, with orange being somewhat disagree here, yellow being neither agree nor disagree, and that light green being somewhat agree. So the map on the left shows respondents moved more often because of these affordability issues in Northeast, East, and Southwest Portland. Of these, Northeast and East Portland on the map are shown as the geographies where respondents are more likely to indicate that they are currently worried about losing their home.
Okay, so moving on to the safety section, there were several notable findings about Portland's feelings of safety. Perception of safety as measured by how respondents feel when walking either during the day or at night is a standard indicator for effectiveness of our public safety services and was tracked by the Auditor's Community Survey for many years. So this survey indicates that people that responded to the survey feel more unsafe in the central city than in their own neighborhoods. In fact, less than a third of respondents feel safe walking at night in the central city. This is indicated by the red and dark red colors across nearly all the geographic areas on the map on the left. However, a majority of respondents, and that's 57%, do feel safe walking in their own neighborhoods at night, as indicated by the mostly light green or light green areas on the map on the right.
It's interesting that the people who live in the central city feel safe walking in their neighborhood.
Yeah, we saw that as well. And another interesting thing, you can see with the patchwork of colors on the map, it not only significantly differs, you know, how you feel depending on where you live, but also residents of East Portland feel both less safe in their own, walking in their own neighborhoods and in the central city, so similar to the central city finding. And finally, this isn't on the map, but perception of safety did differ by gender while walking at night, but not during the day. So women felt less comfortable walking at night. So we also asked a question about how respondents would choose to improve police services from the city. And this had some notable findings. So survey respondents were posed with this question, what might we do to improve police activities? Black respondents placed discussing local concerns with police as their highest priority, while white respondents chose increased police personnel in their neighborhoods. Interestingly enough, decreased wait times are either the top or second most cited response for all race groups. And you can see that's the gray bar across each category.
Mayor.
Commissioner Hardesty.
So this is the map that really, I wasn't shocked because I expected that white respondents would want to see more uniformed people in their neighborhoods. But I was really shocked at the big contrast between the communities of color and white respondents to this question. When people wrote in responses, did people write in more details about either why they felt safe or unsafe and what role they thought police were going to play in them feeling safe?
You know, that's something that we are going to, we have not fully analyzed the open-ended responses to the survey yet, so that's certainly, I think this question, and as well as the question about challenges facing Portland, are going to be ones that we really dig into and maybe even compare the two. So we'll be following up on that.
Or maybe actually do maybe some interim updates on what people are saying about this, because this is a tension constantly that the city has to address, because we have people, we need more officers, and there are too many communities that don't feel safe with armed people walking through their neighborhood. So I really appreciated that particular information. Thank you.
Commissioner Fritz.
Keenan, could you put the slide back up, please? I also noticed that, Commissioner, but I noticed in particular that it's Black and African American people who are so different from the white people. The other communities of color, many of them had more police as their second choice. So it really shows what you are constantly reminding us, that within the communities of color, the Black community is the most impacted.
There's also contradictory data in these, I mean, different pages contradict each other. And mm-hmm. you know, again, we're dealing with perceptions here. Perceptions mm-hmm. certainly have their importance and their value. But the same people who are prioritizing more police personnel in their neighborhoods are also the ones saying they feel safe in their neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
that's a good point. Yeah.
And so it could be just how the question's asked. I often wonder, you know, as I look at some of these slides, if you'd ask the question, if the homeless problem didn't exist, how would you feel about the following statement? Because I feel like the urgency and the magnitude of the homeless crisis is probably overlaying all of these responses. That's just my guess. I don't know that.
Yeah, that's the trick, is there's a lot that we don't know, right?
Right.
And this data, I think, is really useful and really interesting, but to be responsible stewards of the information, I think we do have to dig deeper and sort of cross-reference it with other pieces of information that we have or that are in the survey to try to figure out that why. And you're right, Mayor, that with any survey, how you phrase the question, how you order the question, all of those things can influence the response. You know, we worked with our bureau partners, and the consultants sort of advised us on the language. One of the reasons why we asked things the way we did is we tried to make the language as simple as possible so that somebody didn't have to necessarily understand or know government speak to be able to participate in the survey. But certainly it can influence the responses.
Commissioner.
And just one other comment on this is so interesting, and thank you for presenting it at Council. I encourage everybody to go onto your website and look at it. When I did the survey, I marked no for feeling safe at nights walking in my neighborhood, not because I'm worried about crime, but because there are no sidewalks and no streetlights.
Right.
So it's a diff, and I would imagine that for East Portland might be part
might
of the reason
the
some people
thing.
Said
right.
no,
yep.
that they actually are fine with their neighborliness, but not so much with the traffic.
Good point.
Absolutely. Yeah, and so we'll talk a little bit about this at the end of the survey, but I think what we are hoping is that this survey really elucidates and sort of inspires what we would say are calls to action, right? Either they're confirming things that we thought to be true already, or they're highlighting new trends, and then we dig deeper, and then we decide, you know, how do we know what the next steps are? Do we need more analysis? Do we need to do subsequent engagement with certain communities? How can we make this information really actionable and lead to improvement?
Great, thank you. Okay, so just a few more findings and switching gears here a little bit to talk about transportation. So as I mentioned before, the infrastructure section included questions not only on transportation, we also asked a question on utilities and on solid waste services. So there was some particularly interesting findings about who was being served by our public transit system. And so related to the graph you see here, this isn't in the graph, but there was a question earlier in the survey about what respondents value most about living in Portland. And one of the findings from that question is that communities of color, as well as younger and senior respondents, when we disaggregated by age, ranked the access to public transportation quite highly compared to other options. It was second only to parks and natural areas as what they loved most about living in Portland. So then what you see in the infrastructure section, when we ask directly how, what are respondents doing to get to work or school, and we find that here again, communities of color are more likely to use public transportation. And again, not in the slide, but younger Portlanders, those aged 16 to 29, are also more likely to use citywide transportation, or public transportation than citywide respondents. So that was worth noting. So commute satisfaction. So we asked several questions that we worked with the Bureau of Transportation on to get at Portlanders' level of satisfaction on the reliability of their commute, the safety of their commute, and the level of crowding or traffic. And what we found, I think the big takeaway here is that for drivers, which is most of our respondents, so 57% of people that responded to the survey said that they drove to work or school, they were the least satisfied of any of the responders. So, you know, less satisfied than those that take public transit or bike or walk, or telecommute for that matter. And then, interestingly enough, two-thirds of the respondents felt that traffic or crowding was worse than last year. So,
it is.
Borne out by the survey. So from there, we have some findings on nature and parks.
Yeah, so the last section that we will present today is nature and parks. The slide here shows that 97% of respondents reported visiting a park or natural area in the last year, and 50% of respondents participated in a parks program in the past year. And this was consistent across race. However, younger respondents, those in the 16 to 29 age group, and those who have lived in Portland less than a year were less likely to have participated in a parks program. So the map is showing the recreation or parks program, those who said that they participated in a parks program. And the darker blue are those that participated, the geographies that had more participation. This shows that respondents who live in North, Northeast, Central Northeast, and Southeast were more likely to participate in a parks program. And our last finding slide. So we also asked about respondent satisfaction with the safety and cleanliness of Portland's parks. And we found that 70% of respondents are satisfied with the safety and cleanliness. And the satisfaction was the lowest in East Portland. And lastly, the survey asked about and potential improvements to recreation programs, and most respondents chose that they would like to make them more welcome to people of different cultures and also more affordable. And these choices were supported especially by non-white respondents and those in the younger age range, so in that 16 to 29 age range again.
And by the way, I'll be coming back to council in the fall bump with a bold idea that tracks, comes off of this finding about more affordable. People want programs we can't pay for, and they want them to be more affordable. It's going to require, in the short term, a change in how we budget. And we're going to put an idea on the table that I think is going to get people's attention.
Thank you. So those are all of the findings that we are highlighting today. Again, you have the report. It's available online, and there's a lot more data to dive into. We obviously learned a lot from this process of conducting the survey in this way for the first time and have identified several areas for improvements if we are able to conduct the survey in the future. These include increasing the canvassing operation to ensure a more representative sample, strengthening community and city relationships to help conduct survey outreach, adjusting the timing of the survey to better align with the city budget process in order to use it more as an input into that process, conducting follow-up qualitative research, such as community listening sessions, on priority areas identified by the survey, and adjusting survey questions as necessary to gain additional insights.
Okay. So I will now walk through briefly a few opportunities that we have identified to utilize this data to improve our decision making and our service provision. So it should come as no surprise. The first item is related to budget development. One of the reasons why the City Budget Office took a role in developing the survey was the potential usefulness of this type of data to inform budget analysis and budget development. Having thousands of Portlanders provide their perceptions of city services supplements the hundreds of voices that we typically hear during budget outreach events. Using this information in our budget development processes can help ensure that budget priorities and decisions are informed by a greater number of Portlanders' opinions. Some ways that we would look to use this information includes considering survey data as one input in our budget conversations for this next fiscal year. We'd also recommend engaging our Bureau budget advisory committees with this data to enhance the findings. For example, bureaus may ask BAC members if they agree or disagree with the report findings. BAC members and other advisory groups can also be a source of more qualitative or follow-up information in areas where we would like to dive more deeply. Finally, CBO will look to include this data in our budget and performance analyses as a complement to other available data that we consider. As mentioned briefly before, we also believe there's an opportunity for bureaus to individually work with their commissioners in charge to address findings that are seen as calls to action. So the key question we would pose to our individual bureaus and our citywide leaders is, what does this survey tell us that we must address to achieve our service level and strategic goals as bureaus and as a city as a whole? Answering this question would ensure an additional level of community input to help influence program design and to bolster the feedback loop for city services. The next slide. What we also discovered through this project was that there are numerous ways that we as a city, often only as individual bureaus and programs, ask Portlanders for their feedback. We've heard that there's fatigue in the community around our requests for their input and involvement, and that what folks want is action. We believe that there's opportunity to increase our collaboration and our sharing of the data we are collecting to better lead to action and to reduce the community engagement fatigue. So, to this end, CBO would recommend that we support the continuation and improvement of this surveying effort as a centralized citywide community data collection point, and we would continue to work across the city to ensure that these findings supplement.
I have to ask you a question. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I was going to hold off, but I just can't resist.
Absolutely.
So, the very first slide you showed us
yeah.
was red because people felt that they did not have the opportunity to be heard or interact with the city. And overwhelmingly, people said, we do not feel that we have that opportunity and that they are entitled to that perception as their true perception reported accurately. But they're also fatigued from giving us feedback.
So what we...
Two things work together.
What we saw, I think the way that the question was phrased, do you feel that you have the power to influence decision-making,
okay.
which is different than the opportunity to engage?
Yeah, that is fair. I appreciate that. But is it the quality of the engagement then that they're fatigued by or simply being asked they are fatigued by? Is it they're fatigued because they're tired of getting calls, emails, text messages, or is it because they feel like it's a futile effort responding?
So I think that's a question that I wouldn't be able to answer here today. I would look to work with Office of Community and Civic Life and the PIAC and other groups that advise us on community engagement to really understand, again, the why behind that question. But I think, again, to the point of looking at calls to action, I think this is a call to action, and I think that we can do better as a city to make sure that when we are engaging folks that people feel like it's meaningful and impactful, and if it's not impactful, they understand the reasons why not.
Quickly, as a supplement, we did receive feedback from our community data fellows that were canvassing in the field on their experiences and on what respondents said to them about the experience of being surveyed or kind of their relationship with the survey. So we have that qualitative information. And just it's a small scale, obviously, not citywide, but a lot of folks said that it was the type of engagement and the fact that it wasn't the follow-up, the feedback loop aspect. So exactly what Jessica was just speaking on.
Great. Thank you. That's helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Commissioner Hurst.
I'm sorry. Are you just about done, or should I be asking questions?
Go ahead.
More slides?
Let's get to the end.
All right. So we recommend the support, the continued continuation and improvement of this surveying effort. We would also recommend the continued investment and support of data governance efforts to empower data sharing across the city and the utility of that information. And then again, we know that the city is not the only one tapping the community for engagement and input in the region. There's many other governments that are also frequently doing their own surveys. And so we recommend further exploring regional partnership for community surveying. So one of the last recommendations that we have is also born out of the process of conducting the survey and in conversations around the findings. We discovered that there's a need to have better processes to answer some of those missing why questions, so especially in relation to our high priority programs, so that we can ensure that our city investments are best positioned to achieve the intended outcomes and catalyze new approaches. So one opportunity could be to create and support standardized practices or policies around program evaluation. Some examples of high priority areas identified by the survey are listed on the slide. The dissatisfaction with the city's response to homelessness despite significant program expansion and racial disparities in access to jobs despite economic development programming specifically for communities of color. I think, you know, there's a question that can be asked about if making progress and real sort of visionary outcomes-based progress in these areas is more a matter of scale, as in we need to just do more of what we're doing, or if it's a matter of approach, as in we need to do things a little bit differently. It's possible that the answer is both, but having a consistent evaluation framework can help connect our larger visionary goals to our program and our investment performance. So that's one thing that, one suggestion that we'd like to leave you with. Very briefly, in terms of next steps, I want to close with a brief review of what's been done with the survey data to date and what's yet to come. We held a city budget office internal workshop discussing how we can use this information. We also organized a citywide workshop on August 15th with Bureau staff to present the results and discuss how the data can be used to improve our services. We've been reporting back to the community data fellows and community groups that we've engaged throughout the process, and we've put a version of the survey data up for open download on our website. Looking forward, we're currently working internally on an interactive survey dashboard and are partnering with Smart City PDX to display the survey results on the Portland Maps interface. These two tools should be available within the next few weeks. We'll also be incorporating pertinent survey data into our prior year performance report this fall. And lastly, CBO's has been and will continue to consult with bureaus about how the survey results can be used as an input for their performance management strategies for their advisory committees, using frameworks like results-based accountability and in bureau budget equity tools. So in closing, I want to thank you for your support and your engagement with this important work. Now we have some time for discussion.
Very good. Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor. And thank you, Jessica, and your team for A, conducting a survey, and B, being intentional about doing canvassing to reach out to communities that wouldn't traditionally respond to a survey. I'll go from almost the end backward. When we're talking about people's perception of whether or not they were fatigued from all the requests for information, I'm curious if you have information about whether or not the fatigue comes from one-way communication, right? Mm. Does the fatigue come from we come out constantly saying, what do you need, what do you want, blah, 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 and then you don't hear from the city or other governments again until we need something else? For me, I hear that a lot from community members. It's like it's one thing to come and ask me questions, but it's another thing to let me know what the outcome of you asking me those questions are. Did you have any, do you have any anecdotal data based on the surveys around that?
So it sounds like the canvassing the fellows did hear from the community members that they felt like there wasn't a feedback loop, that they didn't really understand what happened to the information, that it was, you know, a smaller sample of the respondents overall, but that they did hear that. We can look to cross-reference some of the information, such as the question, the response, do you feel like you have the power to influence government? We can actually take that data and look at the respondents who felt more strongly that they didn't have power and cross-reference that with other questions and responses and try to glean some additional information that way as to the why.
And I wonder if, you know, words are powerful, so I wonder if the word power made people respond in a way that would have been different if we had, say, used another word, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't know the answer to that, right? But it just made me think about that when I was reading it, because most people feel powerless when it comes to making government do anything, and that's a very broad, across-the-board statement, right? Mm-hmm. And so I would hope that we would be more intentional, right, and think about, really, what is it, right? Are you able to, I don't know, are you able to influence, right, the city council votes, as an example, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. Because I think most people really, and me included, like, feel like they, you know, it's like, if you look at the federal government, you know we can't do a lot there. I appreciate the desire to use this as we start moving into budget, but I guess I have two cautions. One is that because this is a new survey, I think that there'll be some tweaks that we'll have to make. And so I don't know that I would invest a lot of time actually trying to match this up to the budget process this year. Mm-hmm. But I would like to know how you're going to direct us to actually be able to take what's useful from the survey, mm-hmm. and actually inform the work of developing our budget. Mm-hmm. What is that process going to look like? Mm.
So that's an open question. I think, you know, we know that we want to utilize some of this information and this analysis, the data as a supplement to other data in our analysis and our recommendations, so responding to whatever bureaus are putting in their requested budget. In terms of how the council would like to use this information, I think that's part of the discussion today is, you know, now that you have this information, you've heard an overview of it, what are the areas, what are the findings that you would really like to look to dive deeper into and look for further analysis and or look to take some action through the budget process?
I think part of what we can do is help educate the public through this survey process. And so I'm concerned when we think about community safety that the only entity that we mentioned were police. Mm-hmm. And as you know, we have a lot of first responders that actually don't have guns in uniforms. And so when we talk about community safety or public safety, I think it's important to actually list out all the agencies that the city has that has a responsibility to both be first responders and actually create a safe community. Because I would like to, and the other thing I'd like to know is how many times people call 911, right? Mm-hmm. Because, as you know, we have a real problem with people using 911 as their removal entity, right? Mm-hmm. And that's not an appropriate use of 911. So, and I don't know if that's possible. And, it's not just about me. I understand my other colleagues might have questions that they need as well. But I'm concerned when we believe that public safety is only police, because that's only one small piece of public safety. Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner Fish.
Well, first of all, thank you for the presentation. And I think on a number of levels, I think this survey is an improvement over the auditor's survey. But I think we're still struggling with some of the same challenges. And first and foremost for me is, how scientific is it? I mean, you put the disclaimer in early on about it's wildly overrepresented with certain groups of people in terms of who opted in. And it's an opt-in, not a representative sample. So, Mayor, if we are going to look to next year to be the year to refine this and then to get some data that shows patterns, because that's really, no matter what flaws there are in this survey, there's a huge benefit to us to see patterns, trends, year to year, because you're adjusting for those flaws. Within those flaws, we're seeing how do people's views shift. I would strongly urge us to consider buying some time from Tim Hibbets and his shop, or however we'd have to do it, to have them sit down and review this and give us some feedback. I haven't done a poll in any of my campaigns since I was elected in 2008. So I'm a little rusty on, you know, the question of how you pose questions and how you prompt answers and, you know, other kinds of things. But I think we'd get some interesting feedback if we went to a professional. And here are some of the things that I'm interested in learning more about. When people choose the neither satisfied nor dissatisfied, what are they communicating to us? Is that I don't have enough information to comment, or is that I don't care, or is that I'm not sure? So I don't know what neither satisfied nor dissatisfied means, but if you add that category to the plus side on a number of these these survey results, it significantly boosts the numbers. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to know, what does neither satisfied nor dissatisfied mean, and how should we realistically review that? Number two, I think some of the questions are biased in the way they're worded. Biased in the sense that they almost inevitably provoke a certain response. And I think a number of these questions have to be reviewed, particularly around homelessness, so that there's no prompt in the question, that there is a more generic question, and therefore we get an answer that's based on people's response to a generic question, not to one that's a little loaded up. I don't know anymore what the term trust in government refers to. My sense in talking to a lot of people in the community is that when they disagree with the council, they express the disagreement as a trust issue. That's a big shift over the last 10 years, and I think it's a big shift over the last 30 years, and we've seen that in the Pew surveys. Increasingly, people frame their disagreement around trust rather than just a disagreement as to policy outcomes. But I'd like to know more about what do we mean by trust in government. Our numbers don't seem to be very bad, actually, in trust areas, but I'm not sure quite what people mean when they say trust. When we ask them, you know, do you trust? I don't know. I'm not quite sure any of us know what people mean. I don't have a lot of context. We don't have a lot of context for the answers to these questions, meaning, compared to what? I mean, we know that when close to half of Portland says they generally feel satisfied, generally think city council is doing okay, We know that that's an extraordinarily different set of numbers than we get for Congress. It almost seems like the further away, the more remote the government, the more people's attitudes shift. But when, you know, people are rating Congress in single and low double digits, what does it mean that we're close to 50%? I don't know. What's the context? How do we compare to other jurisdictions? What's a benchmark? I don't know the answer. And then finally, I found that there was, I wasn't sold on the methodology we used as to whether we started with prompting someone with a strongly agree or a strongly disagree. And when you look at some of the results, I think they're skewed by virtue of which came first.
Interesting.
If you ask someone a question and you say, do you strongly disagree, you are inviting the negative response to the question. If you ask, do you strongly agree, you're inviting the positive response to the question. I think the sequence of whether we start with disagree or agree skews some of the results. And I'd like to know what a Tim Hibbets or a pro in the field feels about that, because I think that's just textbook. There's a lot of stuff in here for us to review, but I want to echo something Commissioner Hardesty said. I don't think this is going to be as helpful to us until we have worked out some of the bugs and we have year two data to review, including trends. Mm-hmm. So I'd be reluctant to build this too much into our budget process, particularly because you have been very clear about the disclaimer that it overrepresents older female homeowners. And therefore, even with the adjustments you've made, I'm just not sure how representative it is. So I'd like specific feedback, not necessarily today, from you about how scientific is it, mm-hmm. whether you agree that we should spend a few dollars on Hibbets or someone like that. Obviously, there's a procurement issue. What neither satisfied nor dissatisfied means, whether putting the negative response first skews the results, whether any of the questions are biased in the way they're worded, what trust in government means, and what's the context for us to evaluate this. And we'll have more context, obviously, just on a trend line next year. But I think it's a good start, and I think there's some good data to mine here, but I think it has a long way to go, and I strongly urge us to make an investment in bringing a pro in now to make sure we're on the right track. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioner. We are happy to look into all of those suggestions, and we'll get back to you on that.
So I'll let Commissioner Hardesty ask her question, but I would suggest this is a good starting point, mm-hmm. and I'm greatly appreciative of this, and obviously there's a lot more follow-up that needs to happen, and I would suggest that perhaps we could take this, digest it, think about the questions as Commissioner Fish has suggested, but at this point I'd recommend we move the report and then continue those conversations.
Second.
We have a motion from Commissioner Hardesty, a second from Commissioner Fish. Any further discussion? All in sorry, wrong meeting. Carla, please call the roll.
Hardesty.
I really want to appreciate the intentionality that you used in creating this survey, and I want you all to know that my questions have nothing to do with my confidence and what your vision was as you move forward. And I look forward to working with you to make sure that next year it gets better, and a year after that, and a year after that. I vote aye.
Fritz.
Very interesting. Thank you for the presentation. If anybody's interested, they can go to portlandoregon.gov/CBO.
Okay.
Aye.
Fish.
Yeah. Thanks for an excellent presentation. I do think it's an improvement. And the kinds of issues we've flagged in this hearing, I think, will give us greater confidence in how we use the data going forward to shape decision-making at council. So that's our ultimate goal. So. Thank you. Aye.
Wheeler.
I think this is a really good first step. And yes, we're going to have to continue to massage this. We're going to have to think about how we can elicit more specific answers through the way we ask the questions Commissioner Fish had suggested. But for right now, I just want to give you kudos and thank you for all your hard work. I vote aye. The report is accepted.
Thank you.
To be continued. Thank you.